What up? Welcome to another episode of the Dealer Talk Podcast. This is your host, Herb Anderson. Thank you so much for tuning in. We have none other than Carrie Wise on the show today. Very, very excited for this conversation, folks. But before we get into it, let's talk about some sponsors. Okay, so we're on episode like 12 of this season, something like that. And I've been telling you about Four Eyes, folks. Listen, you have to check them out. It's absolutely free, number one. So just go to the show notes, click the sign up link, and take them for a test drive. You're going to love it. One of the reasons why I recommend them is because I use it with the stores that I consult with. And right now we're in an alternative based market. That means that customers are having to settle. They can't find what they're looking for. And having a system that allows you to capture that customer intent, bring them back to your website, and show alternatives is crucial. Plus, they have this amazing report called the Coffee Report, which is based on shopper behavior on your website, and it connects with the data that's in the CRM, so it gives you a very comprehensive layout of what consumers are doing on your website prior to potentially submitting a lead or even visiting the dealership. And so it's extremely, extremely valuable. So if you haven't done so, go to the show notes, click the link, and sign up. All right. Without further ado, we have Carrie Wise on the show. Carrie, thank you so much for joining me. Really, really appreciate it.
Glad to be here. Glad to be here. Excited about the conversation.
Me too. We kick things off with an intro. So tell us about you.
Yes. Wow. Where do I start? Well, I should probably start with I'm a mother of two. Let me not forget that because that's probably the most important job I have. But I've been working in automotive for 25 years now, which is just insane. They didn't have child labor laws when I started. So I was 5 years old. I got started. That's what I want. I want you to believe that at least.
Awesome.
But a long career and have worked in automotive all on the vendor side. I worked at JD Power and Associates. That's where I started my career, working with mainly the OEMs on customer satisfaction, all the CSI that you see car dealers kind of use. I was managing those studies and presenting to OEMs. Moved on to Edmunds.com and helped them launch their dealer leads business back in 2010, I guess that was. Wow. And then led training and eventually marketing, and then moved on to TrueCar as their head of marketing. And then now I've been at AutoFi since 2001, I guess. So it's been almost 3 years at AutoFi as their chief marketing officer.
2021, right?
Oh, what did I say?
2001.
Thank you for that correction.
Just to make sure. Yes.
Yeah, so 2021 as their chief marketing officer. And so that's one side of my career. And then I also, in 2021... created a nonprofit called Women of Color Automotive Network. And three other co-founders. And we are really an association in some ways that helps connect women of color in the automotive industry, attract them, retain them, and empower them in their careers in the automotive industry. So that's been my labor of love as the president and co-founder of WOCAN, as we call it.
Oh, that's awesome. Very cool stuff. I got to give a special shout out to my homie, Derek. Derek, what's up?
Yes. So, love Derek.
him and I have worked together on some of the accounts that I consult with. So it's, I had
he's
to
awesome.
Say hello.
Yeah.
All right. So I wanted to kind of kick things off at the 50,000 view, right? I mean, I think that obviously, AutoFi is a pretty large organization. You guys have a lot of dealerships. And so, that means a lot of cool data. What are you guys seeing currently? We're coming off this really, high of, record years, profitability, all these amazing things. Obviously, there seems to be a little bit of a slowdown. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think the big theme for us, especially in this last 6 months, has been all about affordability. And the trends that we're seeing is that You know, obviously with interest rates going up, consumers are more concerned about getting in a car, what they can afford, what their payment can be. And so if you look at our site, at one point we saw, I think it was like a almost a 30% year over year increase in credit apps through our platform across our, you know, thousands [S2] Wow. [S1] Of dealers. If you look at, you know, more of the subprime credit band, it was more like upwards of 50% increase year over year, and then filling out a credit app through the digital retailing experience on Autofi. And so, you know, for us, what that indicates is that customers are more concerned than mm-hmm. ever, you know, about what my payment's going to be. Can I afford this car? And so we've been pushing our dealers, you know, to really lean in, right? If you were hesitant to allow a customer to calculate a payment, if you were hesitant to enable a digital credit app to be completed, like, now's not the time, because if you don't offer that as a car dealer and somebody else does, or their credit union or some other external source, like, they're gonna be seeking that information. So finance has to move forward in our experience. We can't wait, you know, until they get in the showroom to have those discussions.
Yeah, you know, it's that poses a question. Like, oftentimes, and this has obviously been alleviated a lot post-COVID, because I think that, and I've said this multiple times on the show, but I think that one of the things that happened during that time is that people that were kind of on the fence with digital retailing went all into it, right? They, yeah, we need this, we got to have it. And they, you know, now everybody's kind of bought in on having the tool on their website. But the in-store usability and those things, which I hope we get a chance to talk about, not so much, right? But with the usage, right, with the increase in usage, one question that kind of comes to mind is, the dealers that I consult with anyway, always are concerned that customers can potentially sell themselves out of the deal, right? Because they'll mm-hmm. go on here, they sometimes put wrong credit information or wrong trade information. They can get some numbers that are not accurate, you know, that could create some friction in the in-store experience, or worse yet, they might, you know, try to find out what their payment's going to be, and then they're like, oh wow, that's super expensive, and not even transact. How does the system or what you guys do combat that, you know, to kind of put that out there for decision makers that might be tuning in?
Yeah, you know, I think you know, you hear a lot about penny perfect payments. I hate that word as a marketer, because it's just so weird. Everybody's like, we have the most accurate, you know, information, but we really do have the most accurate information, you know. And I think part of that is your system, your digital retailing system, your showroom platform has to be very precise in all the different variations of customers that come in. Mm-hmm. You know, the rebates and incentives. You know, their military customer, are they stackable? And so what we do really well is, one, that accuracy, right, of having all those data sources that can give them precise information. Mm-hmm. The second part of it is, you know, enabling a customer, you know, to choose some F&I products and understand how that affects their payment. The trade value is a good example. You know, we try to make it so that it's advantageous for the dealer. The customer is getting what they need in a trade value. But for example, we don't show excellent and poor on the KBB values. We remove that because we know that most cars are not in excellent shape, right. and not all of them are poor either. They're kind of in the middle, those three buckets in the middle. Right. And so we try to present the customer what they need in terms of a trade value, but not make it harder on the dealer and allow them to choose something that most customers are, you know, a condition that most customers really, it's not going to apply to them. Under and over allow on trade. Like, these are just on the back end from a dealer standpoint, the dealer can configure the system so that it works for them. The markups that they would normally include when we present lender offers, right? We want you to be able to include those markups within our system as well by credit band. And so I think what's really critical, back to your question, and how do we convince a dealer to be comfortable with this, is a lot of it is configuration and setup, and we can mm-hmm. customize this experience so that it matches what you would typically do in the showroom. and that it doesn't set poor expectations from a customer standpoint. You know, I think the whole argument of, oh, this is going to cause more friction, I'm going to be giving information, it's caused confusion. I think you have to ask yourself, well, if I didn't have this experience, what will happen? Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, we don't know what we're losing. There's no data on what we were losing. There's no data that because we didn't enable a customer to get approved and get lender decisions, that they went to their credit union, that they went directly to the banks themselves.
Or instead a competitor. Of working through the credit.
And that's, to me, we focus more on our fears versus what we're missing by actually not offering these experiences on our dealership website.
You know, that's a great point. And I really haven't thought about it like that before. And I'll be the first to admit, like, for me, digital retailing has been one of those things where I know we need to have it, but I also, it's a frustrating experience for me as a consultant, because because there isn't a full, utilization of the tool, it does create friction. Because you have customers that show up and they're like, hey, I submitted this and we can't find the credit app. And I mean, this stuff happens pretty much at every store that I've consulted with. I will say about Autofi, I've had the opportunity to kind of peek behind the curtain and kind of look at the platform itself, you know, from a back end standpoint. And it, to your guys' credit, it's the most accurate I've ever seen, not just in terms of rebates and all those things, but even, you know, down to like the taxes and things in your particular region, which is one of those things that has been really, really difficult with those types of tools. And so, I don't know, I think that's a great point. It's got me thinking, like, where's the data on not having it? And, you know, like, if I'm shopping, if I am spending 14 hours doing research, you know, which is the stat that's been out there forever, and I go to multiple dealerships and, you know, some of those don't have the experience, does that deter me from transacting? That's a valid point.
You brought up a good point about process. And so, because I want to make sure I'm clear on that, you know, your digital retailing platform is as good as your people and your process. At the end of the day, if you have poor process that has disconnects or handoffs that are not streamlined, it doesn't matter what platform you're on. To your point, you're going to have some challenges. And so one of the things that we're really focused on is, obviously, you have your dealership website, but one of the touch points that we actually talk about a lot is, what about your internet staff? When someone calls and asks for a payment, a lot of times the answer is, you got to come in. Well, there's some customers like me that are like, no. I need you to give me an idea. I don't want to come in. I'm calling you because I want to get an idea of a payment. And the interesting thing is, at some dealers, their website enables the customer to answer that question better than their internet and BDC. And so for us, we have stores where we're arming them with the same tools that customers can self-service on the website. You're arming your internet BDC with the same tools. Right. If the digital retail platform can calculate a precise payment and someone says, well, what's my payment? You should be able to use that same tool or send that customer a remote deal that's trackable, that when they get that, the internet BDC can actually see them open it, see them make the changes, and stay connected and get that customer to want to show up. We see that when we arm our salespeople and our teams with the same tools we're arming the customers with, the show rate increases dramatically in terms of appointments actually showing up in the dealership. And then we could touch on the showroom. Like that's our next frontier is, you know, how do we enable the showroom, dealers to sell better in the showroom?
Yeah, I definitely want to talk about that. Yeah. But, you know, before we leave the pricing thing, because I just had Sean R. Moore on the podcast, and we were talking about that, and one of the things that comes up is always with BDCs is the pricing thing. Like the managers hate it when the BDC reps start to give customers too much information, like price, for instance. But yeah, I mean, if you have a digital retail experience, you can always instruct your whoever you're having that conversation with to go and, you know, encourage them to build their own deal or to find, get that information for themselves and have that digital experience on your website. The other thing too is, you know, the way to overcome that objection for me, I've never really understood that whole pricing thing, because for me, it's like, well, the price is what's on the website, Mr. Customer. Now your deal structure, that's going to depend on many factors, which is why we need you here. Right. But if you can do all that stuff digitally and save the customer time, then, I mean, yeah, that would be the ideal situation. That would really mean that the tool is doing what it's supposed to do. And now it's not just a lead widget, right? It's actually getting that customer, right? It's getting that customer from like, hey, interest, I like this car, all the way down to, you know, kind of figuring out what they're going to pay. And then, provided all the information is good, particularly if they have good credit and they show up to your dealership, then that process should be significantly sped up, to, you know, for lack of a better term. And then, yeah. And then imagine the experience, right? Now the customer's like, wow, I did this online. I got the price. It was pretty much what I was quoted. I came into the dealership and it saved me like 2-3 hours. Now that's a win for the customer, because, you know, they're going to be like, wow, this is amazing experience.
Yeah. And we find also that our dealers are using AutoFi as a way to engage leads that aren't even responding. Right. So you got a customer, they've engaged with you, they started the experience, let's say on AutoFi, they calculated payment, they dropped off, and you're calling, they're not responding. You're trying to get them on the phone. Oftentimes an invite to like, hey, we saw you were shopping on our experience, we want to invite you to like continue. In many cases, the customer will actually engage with that link more than they'll answer the phone. And the beauty of that, once again, is this is all trackable. Like, we're seeing a customer who won't answer the phone, but we're seeing them open the link. We're seeing them, they were on one car, and now we see them shopping on another. So all of that, it's really important for us to not just give the customers a good experience, but pass all of what we call those like breadcrumbs to the salesperson as well. So that when they're responding, they're more informed.
What do you say is the point of drop off, you know, statistically or data wise for the customer? When do you think, you know, or based on the information you guys have, is the point where the customer kind of defects and leaves without completing the information? Is it? Yeah.
I think
credit,
on most
trade.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say. It's usually credit. And if you look at most platforms, you know, some of our competitors, AutoFi is a very finance centered digital retailing platform. We also have a showroom platform that we'll be rolling out, but we are very finance centered. A lot of the other competitors have their pluses. There's things that they do really well. But because they're not as centered on the finance piece, it's all about getting the lead, right? It's like let a customer calculate a payment as a way of just getting another lead. And so the drop off, to answer your question, a lot of times is the credit, because that's when things get real. That's when you have to give your social security, you have to give your information. And, you know, we definitely see a drop off there. For us, relative to other competitors, we have data from Route One that shows about we get about 7 times more credit apps than your average digital retailing platform.
Oh wow!
And a lot of times it's because we do it differently. Our credit app and our approach to a digital credit app is not about putting a paper on a digital platform. Mm-hmm. It is very user friendly to say the least.
But how does that need to evolve? Because I also know you guys have your soft pull product that there's no credit impact, and the customer can, you know, kind of see kind of where they're at, and it doesn't impact their credit in any way, you know, shape or form, right? So what is the how does that need to evolve, do you think, in order for it to have more, to be more sticky?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple things. One, as you said, we have to offer the customer multiple paths of engagement. It's not just one path. Not everyone just calculates a payment. Some people jump straight to the trade value, and that's their entry into the deal. Some people, like as you mentioned, will do a soft pull. And so what we emphasize to our dealers is, while you don't want 100 CTAs, you definitely want to be thoughtful in the entries, the points of entries, and the soft pull is a really good one. That's a really good one to overcome that person that doesn't want their credit pulled, our dealers that are using that soft pull a lot of times are marketing it well. They have a banner that's like, click here, you know, understand what you can afford, no impact to your credit. So one way to overcome their fear is it's alternative paths. The other one is the user experience, as I mentioned. And there's a couple things that we do that work well. One, we don't ask the social security number until the last step. And that's a really important thing. The worst thing you can do is fill out a credit app. And the very first step is, give me your social security. Right.
Nope.
I'm done. Damn, what's going on here? How are you going to use it, right? So we take them down the steps of the credit app where they're invested, and then we ask for the social security as the very last step. And that does wonders. The other thing is we make it really easy on them. So for example, if you asked me my income, I could tell you my annual income, probably down to the dollar, because I focus on it a lot. But you believe it or not, the average customer couldn't tell you how much they make.
Right.
Right. And so when you talk about inaccuracies, and part of it's because we're putting it on the customer to be able to calculate that. It's like, I don't know, I make $20 an hour, right? That's what a customer's thinking. They're thinking about what they make per hour, or what they make per week, or what they make in a month. And so our system allows them to choose however they want to report that income, by hour, by biannually, whatever. And we then calculate the annual number. And then also just errors. Because we work with all the banks, we know when a bank's going to reject a credit app, right? And so even something like, I just forgot the name, it's a tilde, like the tilde on certain words that are in Spanish, junior, whether it has a period or not. If a consumer enters that incorrectly, they don't put a period, or they will correct it actually in the credit app to ensure that it's going to be submitted properly.
That's awesome. I didn't know that. That's super dope.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah. Because we want the approval. I mean, you know,
yeah, sure.
Approval as well.
Yeah. So you said two things there that I want to touch on. One, you talked about the CTA experience, which I definitely want to talk about. And the other thing you mentioned was the marketing side of it. So I want to get into both of those. So let's start with the CTA portion of it. So here's my frustration, right? And it's just, it just drives me insane. Why do we have this experience on our website that is just full of give me your information steps? It's just so annoying. Like, With let's Autofi call it or whoever, right? Yeah. Just for the sake of the experience, isn't that CTA enough? Doesn't that digital retailing do all the things that we're already asking the customer to do individually anyway?
Yes. Right?
I mean, I don't get it. Like, look, if you hit the calculate my payment button on your website, it's going to run the trade. It's going to run the credit. It's going to, at some point, whether it's in the beginning, if you lead gated, or at the end when they submit, it's going to capture that customer's information. Why do we need all these different CTAs on the website? I don't get that.
I have the answer for you.
It just drives me crazy.
We are lead addicts as an industry in auto retail. We are addicted to leads. We've been addicted to leads since all the third-party websites and came out, right? And so I think there's a mindset that if I overwhelm them with CTAs, you know, not only our digital retail CTAs, like calculate your payment, I'm going to do a trade system over here, I'm going to have a Capital One over here, I'm going to all these buttons,
right,
that somehow I'm going to capture them. I'm going to capture their information. And to me, the more frustrating part, besides the CTAs, if I'm with you, I'm like, what is going on here? This is crazy town in terms of a user experience.
Yeah.
But the second part is sometimes you click on the CTA and you get a dead end.
I know.
It's like, promises me something. I put my information in and then I don't even get what it promised me.
Well, that's the other thing, because you have all these CTAs, you almost need to hire somebody to just go in there and click them every day to make sure that they're not broken. It's just like,
I love them. Like, get this information. Click here. Give me your information. And then it's like, the dealer will call you soon.
Yeah.
It's like, it misled me. I gave my information and you didn't answer. I gave my information and in exchange, I didn't get what.
And I got nothing. Yeah. And now I know somebody's going to call me and just bug me to death.
I try to step outside of automotive because I think one of the challenges in our industry is that we're so insulated. Like everybody that works in automotive and is good in automotive, we've been doing it for 20, 30, 40 years. Like we've been in this business a long time. And I think what we all have to do sometimes is take a step back and like remove our knowledge of the industry, remove what we know works, and say, if I was in the shoes of a consumer today, and particularly thinking about like my daughter, my 16-year-old daughter, like what would she want? And I can tell you, and even with me, it's rare that I fill out a lead form, like anywhere. Like I can't tell you the last time I filled out a lead form. Now, what I will do is I will set up an appointment with somebody. So like my hairstyle or, I love my dealership when I set up my car for service. I'm not putting a lead form for someone to call me back.
Right.
I'm actually picking an appointment time. And I will give my information for either an appointment or if you're going to give me something back.
Right.
Instantly.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Like I've talked about this on the show as well, but you know, it's not that the customers won't give you the information, is that we haven't given them a reason to, right? And and they're just used to these experiences with these CTAs, to your point, on the websites that go nowhere. And it's, you're just trying to get my information so that I can get called. And that's why a lot of these leads, nobody responds when you call them, because they didn't, first of all, you changed the verbiage on it. And you might have tricked them into giving you their information, but after they saw that they didn't get what they were looking for in return, they're done, right? So you can call them, email them, all the stuff. They're never going to engage with you. And on the lead stuff too, like I've always said this, it's the laziest way to measure performance. Like seriously, I've never done an audit, a lead audit at a dealership and been like, wow, 80%, 90% of the sales are coming from leads. Like it just never happens. So it's just like 10, 11, 12%, right? So that means that the majority of customers that go to your dealership that end up buying a car, yes, they experience you digitally. Yes, they see your ads and they click on them and they engage on, you know, if they're searching on Google or whatever. I mean, we know what the path to the purchase looks like, but they're not going to give you the information. They're just going to show up. So the goal should be to make that that digital experience translate to the in-person experience. And when your digital experience is all cluttered, that's what I feel it's going to be when I go there.
You know? 100%. Like, how about we all blow up the word digital retailing? Like, it's retailing. Yeah. And yes, you want to power your sales experience. You want to use technology to make it more streamlined, more efficient, make your people better, make your people more effective. But the idea of us focusing so much, as you mentioned, like on this widget, on the lead, but not putting as much on the process, on how we respond, how we're going to incorporate it into the actual experience, like that is the gap. And that is why, you know, the kind of the promise of digital retail as this kind of way of like making things faster and better, it's been realized somewhat, but there's still this large gap.
Mm-hmm.
And it's why we are so much more focused now on the showroom. You'll see at NADA, that's going to be our big focus, is like, how do we power that showroom more than the way on the site?
No, I love that. Definitely want to talk more about that here in a minute. But the other aspect that you talked about that I wanted to touch on is the marketing side. So here's what the deficiency. And I've talked about this. Earlier in the season when we had Car Now on the show and we were talking about, you know, their chat platform. But so we're bought in, right? We do the digital retailing thing. I don't think that there's that much of a resistance to digital retailing as there was before COVID. I think we can all agree on that. But we put it on the website and then we don't market it. We don't tell people about it. We don't build processes around it. Our people in the dealership don't use it, don't even you know, they don't engage with it at all. So why do you think that is? Like, wouldn't it be super cool if we bought into it and we had this digital retailing experience on the website, and then we had this dope marketing campaign and created a moat around that whole experience, and we told people about it, and we encouraged them to go and do this online, and really went out there and promoted it? I don't get it. Like, we just, it's like we put it on the website and we treat it like a lead widget, and it's not a lead widget. You know, I don't know. What are your thoughts?
So I completely agree with you that it's such a missed opportunity not to brand this digital retailing, this digital enabled sales process and experience that you're going to have if you're working with a platform like Autify. And so we really work and encourage our dealers, like name it. First of all, name it, right? Is it the Fast Track system? Yes. Is it the Go system? Is it the whatever it is? But you got to brand it and put a name on it. The second part is you got to sell the value of a customer engaging this, right? So a lot of our dealers do a really good job of having a video, right? I think of like Rick Reichardt. Like, he has this video that talks about this express program and what you're going to get out of it and how it works. And what he really does a good job, and other dealers that we work with do a good job, is it's not a value for you, the dealer. It's a value that's going to resonate for the customer.
Right.
What's going to resonate? They could save time, right? It's going to cut out steps in the process. When you come in the showroom, like, we're going to have someone there that's going to pick the deal up where it left off, whatever it is. But I think you're right. Like, we got to package this system. We got to put a name on it. We got to put the value. And we got to have assets, not only on our website that help tell that story and why this is good for a customer, but we have to make sure our team can also speak to that and they're equally bought in. Because this is 100%. Not just a digital experience. This is an entire sales experience.
100%. But it's, so that's the thing that frustrates me. Like, we will spend thousands of dollars to make sure that our inventory is on all these different platforms. Oh, I got to be on Auto Trader and Cars.com and Google and Facebook, and my car needs to be everywhere. And what are you focusing on? The commodity and price. That's it. Where's the brand message on that? It doesn't exist, right? And here you have the opportunity to build something with a great message. Create this advantage within your market, because a lot of your competitors are not doing it. So if you do it, you stand out more. And you have this opportunity to tell the customer, give them something why they should transact with you, in relationship to everybody else in your market. And we don't do that, you know. So we will spend a lot of money to put our cars everywhere so that you just have the commodity and the price game, which only means that you have to sell your cars cheaper. And here you have an opportunity to build an experience that customers, by the way, will pay more money for, right? Because that's what we tend to do as consumers. When we have a great experience, we pay more money. We're actually happier with the purchase, and we don't do it.
That's some of the things that we use when we try to get buy-in from our dealers is, like, one, that kickoff meeting with the dealer, like having the owner in the room, having the general manager in the room, like training the team on, like, this is a system we're putting in place, not just on your website, but this is going to be empowering our sales experience in general. And then the other thing that we'll try to do is, like, sharing data points and outcomes that matter to the team to get them bought in. So, for example, you know, we see, like, our most engaged dealers that are really leaning in. They're sending remote deals. They're doing first pencils in some cases using our platform. They're really leaned in. They're marketing it. They're getting like $400 more back end profit on their Autify deals compared to their non Autify deals. And so we'll use a stat like that. The F&I products, they're choosing 1.5 F&I products in the digital website experience on their own. And then they still can be sold once they get in the showroom. And so, like, I think part of the gap that you're seeing is there's not buy-in, because I think dealers are doing it for the wrong reason. Mm. They're like, I just need a widget on my site. My OEM told me to do it. Or I want them to come to my site because I don't want them to go to the third party site. But, like, it has to be more that you see this as a way to transform your business and not just something you kind of have to do. And then other, we have to stop complaining about the third party sites, because mind you, I've worked at two of them, right?
So yes, right.
I worked at one of them that had a lot of hatred. Where
so did I, like, by the way. So I worked at Cox Automotive. I worked for Auto Trader KBB. So I'm not a third party hater, right? Like I think that they have their value, but what we shouldn't be giving all our advertising control over to them either, right?
100%. So you've got to own your own.
Right.
Digital showroom.
And we've gotten, I've talked a lot about that this season, but we've gotten so far digitally that all we're doing is we're making sure that our cars are on 1,000 different platforms, right? Because, you know, they have shoppers or whatever. I get it. I understand the reasoning, but you cannot create a brand strategy around that. You just can't do it, right?
You need
to have your brand message out there. You need to have a brand message that ties all those things in, so that when they do see your cars on these platforms, they're thinking about not just the car and the price, but they're thinking, oh, I already know why I should buy there. They do this, this, and these things, and the experience is different or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so. It's really like any company. Like, I lead a marketing team, right? And we have to do a lot of work to articulate our story. And what makes us better and what makes us different. And every dealer has to go through that same process. Years ago, I worked at a third party site, and we did tons of consumer research, just like you probably did at Cox, where it's lots of consumer research. And one of the studies we did was really profound, where we asked customers, what brand messages could they recall that they hear from car dealers? Like, what are the prevalent brand messages, value props that they hear from car dealers, and then what actually matters to them? Like, when they choose a dealer, what are the reasons that choose a dealer? And it was really interesting, because things that they would hear are, we're family owned. We have, you know, more inventory than anyone else. We have the lowest price. Like, the big one was, we're the number one, you know, Honda dealer in the region. We're the number one. And guess what? Didn't care.
Right.
And it's not that things don't matter, but what happens is we tend to, as an industry, like, hang our hat on the things that matter to us.
Like being number one. Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom. Let me pound my chest. Right. And then the customer's like, or having, you know, a lot of inventory during the inventory shortage, that did matter, but I'm talking about, this is pre inventory shortage. And the customers are like, I want to know I'm paying a fair price.
Right.
I want to know I'm not going to spend a lot of time. And, like, those are the things we actually overlook, is what's the value that's for the customer.
100%. And before we move on, I had this thought as you were talking. I want to get it out there. But during COVID, it was great, right? The strategy worked perfect. Why? Because demand and supply. That's the only reason. There was no inventory, so you wanted to have your cars everywhere. That's a no-brainer. The more you have your cars out there, the more chances that, you know, the people that are searching are going to find them. But we're going into the reverse situation, right? So, and maybe not so much on the inventory side, but the demand certainly is. I'm not saying that there isn't demand. I still see that as a plus for us, and compare, like, if you want to compare it to like 08, 09, because back in those days, there was surpluses of inventory, and we're still not in that situation. So that's still that in our advantage. But it's not last year, and it's certainly not 2021. So, you know, we just have to get better at the branding game, folks. Like, we have to. Yeah. And it's not just, here's what's crazy, right? It's not just me saying this, but notice what companies like Google have done, what Facebook have done. Microsoft, they created this click, what I call click product, which is your vehicle listing ad. So you could see the ad and click on it, which is, you know, it's a listing, basically, is what it is. But then now they introduce PMax, right? So that they can grab all your assets and then put your assets out there so that you can also tell your branding message. That's not, you know, that was done on purpose, right? That was done on purpose. So you have to understand that we got to get back to that. You know, we have to have some sort of flavor in the traditional sense of marketing, And quite frankly, like I said, I did an episode by myself, last time we recorded, because I had all these thoughts that I wanted to get out there. And it's just, it's boring. I'm just bored.
Yeah.
All we do is we have these cars on here. We have them here. Okay, people are clicking. Yes, this is how much you're getting per click. This is how much you're getting. Okay, great. Let's do some real marketing. You know what I mean?
Even on social, you know, I think about the classic, let me take a picture of the customer that just bought a car. Okay, I'm not saying that you shouldn't do that, but we can do better. There's more. There's more that we can do than showing us shaking a hand with one customer of the car. I think there's so much we can do. And I think there's just some innovative things. I remember years ago, I don't even know if this dealer's still doing it, but they offered driving lessons on their dealership lot. I'm sure the insurance costs a lot of money, but I always think about we have physical locations as a dealership, right? Grand lots. Why aren't we being more creative like that in engaging the community with the assets that we have? And so they were having driving school. And guess what happens when those 16-year-olds are driving their Hondas at the driving school at the car dealership? Guess what they're going to think about when they're buying a car?
Right. Yeah, of course.
Their parents are buying a car. And so it's the long game. Marketing is not just the short game of what you can get this very second, which is kind of what we think about in auto retail. It's also the long game of how do we nurture customers for the future?
For sure.
Right? How do we brand?
Yeah, if you can get their mind share before the need, that's super powerful, you know? So, all right, so we're getting close to that time, but I do want to talk a little bit about the in-store experience, because there's no question that that's going to be the future. I think we're in this, and I've said this again on different episodes, but we're at this place where it's very interesting. We have a generation that still works at the dealership that's kind of has their feet on both ends, but this goes for employees and customers, right? So we're doing this kind of the same, we're okay with technology, but we also have the traditional way of doing things. But that's going to go away, right? And the new generation, like my kids, for instance, everything's been bought with a click. They don't, I can't even remember the last time that they bought clothes at a store, for instance, right? Everything is ordered. They're used to, click and get sort of a deal. And they're going to be consumers soon. And when that time comes, I don't foresee that buying a car online is going to be this you know what I mean? I almost think it's going to be an expectation. And so, or some combination of it, right? Where they're building their own deal and leveraging what we call digital retailing today, which I'm sure it's going to evolve in the next couple of years. But so how do we get the dealers bought in? That's the thing, right? Because I can imagine a dealership where it's all, I don't want to say digital because it already is, but going to the dealership, having a kiosk or I think of the Apple store, right? With these tables and tablets and you go to these tables and you pick up the tablet, you look at cars. Yeah, I like this car. You work the deal, do all that stuff. And then when you're ready to take the test drive, somebody comes and grabs you and they take you on this test drive. Yeah, I like the car. Okay, your deal is already built out. Your credit, you have all this information. Yeah, I want to transact. Okay, boom. All that information goes straight into finance, and then you go and finish in the box, and then you drive, and the whole process probably takes you an hour and a half. To me, that would be that's what the future should be like, or it seems like it's going to be in that way. But what are your thoughts, and what do you think the evolution of what digital retailing today is will look like?
Yeah, so I want to start by just saying that the dealer will still be involved, and the automotive industry getting to a point where a button's clicked and it's just all done, online or digitally. I think we have to, so for us, showroom is going to be our huge focus. We have about 30 stores that we've piloted on our showroom platform that we're actually rolling out in January, right before NADA. And one of the things is we've learned a lot by piloting this, because it was hard. It's very hard to do showroom. You've heard of a lot of platforms talking about in-store and their solutions, but you don't always hear the results out of it, because getting it right, there's no room for inaccuracy when you're arming a salesperson to talk numbers in the store. Online, you can get away with that because it's pretty much a lead. But in right. the showroom, things have to be right to get buy-in. And so that's one thing we learned. But I think we have to solve the dealer's problems. And it's not just about the consumer experience. Do you want to be selling a car for 3 to 4 hours? Like as a salesperson, as a manager, like
right.
if you can move cars faster, wouldn't that help you as and so we want to kind of focus on like, how do we shorten this process? You know, if you look at the Cox study of how long it takes to buy a car, and I think it was like 3 to 4 hours, right? Like 6 years ago, it was 3 to 4 hours.
Right.
If you look at the most same. Recent study, it's improved by like 10 minutes. Yeah. So the idea of like,
and we have all this technology too.
we've improved by 10 minutes. And so why? Because we haven't embraced it in the showroom. When you talk about getting numbers, for example, that is still an incredibly cumbersome process. The back and forth to the desk multiple times because the customer is changing things. I want to put more down. What if I want to lease? Like the going back and forth to the desk, printing it from our DMS. And so one of the things that we're tackling is just that part of it, of like desking a deal, structuring a deal. How can we empower that salesperson with management guardrails and oversight to handle those deals that are a little more easier and straightforward so that the manager has time to focus on the difficult deals, to train their staff, to think about the strategy? And right now, we're in a world where there's a bottleneck at the desk. There's a lot of weight being put on that sales manager to make all kinds of decisions, yet technology could absolutely streamline that if we can enable our teams to do a little bit more. And so that's where I see it. I see us putting technology in the hands of our salespeople. And that looks a little different. Some stores are completely one person. We're not advocating for that. Some might let the salesperson do a first pencil. Like it's going to look a little different depending on the dealer. But nevertheless, technology is still going to take some time out of that. The other second part of a pain point that we see is the consumer distrust. No matter how good we've gotten as an industry, when you look at those rankings of professions, we're still at the bottom yeah. with the lawyers and the politicians, no matter what.
I hate that so much.
I've never seen a study where that's changed. And so what we find is that your salesperson going back and forth to the desk, leaving the customer to get numbers, is a symbol of, and it reiterates the negative perception. That this person is going to the desk to do what? To screw me over.
Yeah.
Like they're back there behind there trying to figure out how to get me to pay more. And then coming back and forth and changing the price 6 or 7 times. Now the customer's like, game on. I know that whatever price you put in front of me is not the real price. And so we believe that a technology like ours actually could bridge that trust gap, because the customer oftentimes will believe a technology. They'll believe what's on a screen more than they believe what comes out of your team's mouth, unfortunately.
Yeah, but why would it, like, I agree, but I also think that we've created that ourselves, because it is weird. Yeah. I mean, let's just admit it. It is weird. If you go buy anything and the salesperson gets up and goes somewhere else to talk to somebody and be what? Like, okay. Like what's going on here? But why am I? And why am I not privy to? Why am I not privy to that information? Like, I want to know what they're talking about, and then you're passing me along from department to department, and like it's like I don't like what. It's just, I mean, let's just be consumers for a minute and understand that that's a weird thing. So we can't really blame. Yeah, we can't blame the customer for feeling uneasy with that. So, but on the technology side, right? Like to me, like if I was selling cars, like that would be super dope. Like, hey, here you go, Mr. Customer.
Let's work a deal together.
Yeah, let's work it together. Here you go. Okay, you know, let's answer all these questions. Boom, boom, boom. And you're doing it yourself right then and there. And you never have to leave the customer, right? And you can just have that conversation as you're filling out this information, and they're seeing everything happen in real time. Like, that piece alone is a huge improvement.
Will change everything.
Yeah,
that piece
for sure.
And what we're finding, and I'm going to give you a little preview because we haven't shared some of this stuff, but like, what we're finding in our pilot stores, because we finally got this thing right, and we have stores that are using us on 70% of their deals, which means that, like, you have to buy in when you're using it the majority of the time. And for so what sure. we're finding is, from hello, from the check-in of the customer, back from the test, when we check the customer in, to actually approving them for a loan, 28 minutes, which, you know, that the negotiation process is typically much longer. It's that and the F&I part of it is what causes us to have a 4-hour process. And so
right.
locking in numbers and getting approval in 20 minutes, right, versus hour and a half, 2 hours, the back and forth, we're also finding that customers are fighting less, right? They're less likely to fight because they're involved. They're involved in the experience. They're saying, I want to put this down. Hey, what if I lease? Let's play around with that. And so I think a lot of times a customer doesn't know what they want. Mm-hmm. And they want to find out, okay, if I played around with certain factors, where is that going to get me, by the way, from a payment standpoint? Because most of our customers, they're not even asking for a discount for the system.
Right.
They're actually just manipulating factors that change the payment, which is exactly where we want them. We want them not thinking about the price of the car, but how can you get me to the payment that I feel comfortable
right.
with?
Yeah, and I've said this before, but most customers are payment shoppers.
Yes.
You know, if they can feel comfortable with the payment, regardless of, you know, the amount, and obviously that's to a certain degree, but, you know, then they're more likely to transact. Even in the times that we're in right now, by the way, folks,
yes.
if a customer goes to your dealership right now and they feel that they can afford the payment, even with 11% or whatever, they're still going to transact, right?
Okay. I feel like I'm like jumping all over you on these conversations because it's like every time you say something, I'm like excited because I'm so passionate about it. But what you just said is so important about like the interest rates. Here's the other thing about the transparency. I think it's like such an overuse. Everyone hates that term. But in this day and age where interest rates are so high, you're going to face customers that are pissed off at you.
Right.
Because they don't realize that things change relative to 10 years ago when they last bought a car. And so they're in there going, wait a minute, with my credit, like I'm not paying a 7% interest rate. No way. Right. And so guess what? When the technology, when we have them fill out the credit app and they get lender responses back from Chase and Santander directly with those logos, it's the bank saying that it's an 11% interest rate. It's not you.
Oh, that's so
true. And right now, we're delivering the bad news. Like, hey, the best we could get you versus the technology saying, here's three banks.
This is what they came
back with. Yeah. To 12.
Wow.
That's it.
Super strong, right? For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the validation, having that third-party validation, I think is critical in technology. For whatever reason, we almost believe it more than a person.
For sure. No question. So, hey, thank you so much for doing this. I really, really appreciate it. There is one question that we ask everybody that comes on the show. But before that, I wanted to give you a couple minutes, you know, like plug anything, like what's, you know, what you guys got going on. Is there any events, trials, anything that people can, you know, here the podcast.
I would love for all of you to reach out to us, autofi.com. You can get more information on how it works. You can reach out to me. LinkedIn's probably the best way. Carrie Wise, and look for me, Chief Marketing Officer. And just get a feel for how we can help not only your website experience, not only your that transition between the online to offline, but also the showroom. Today, we offer, you know, the ability to do a first pencil. What we're launching and piloting right now is the full showroom solution with desking, F&I menu, lender routing, the whole thing within the showroom. We're really excited about it. And you're the first to hear about this because I have not talked about it.
Right on.
But we will be launching that in January. I can't share a lot of details on that other than this stuff works. We're so excited about the results we're seeing. And we'll also be debuting that at NADA. So reach out to us now, and we'll share what we have going on today. And then we'd love to share with you what's happening in the future as well.
Right on. Very cool. So go to the show notes, folks. I'm going to put all of Carrie's contact information there, that you know, how to reach her, get in touch with her. And, you know, if you want to do a demo or things of that nature. Carrie, I'm going to put you on the spot. Is there any...
I'm scared.
Discounts, anything that we can offer somebody that says, hey, I heard the podcast with that you did at the Dealer Talk podcast with her, you know, like, can we give them a little sum?
My sales team is going to kill me. I promise. So, like, reference that you saw me on this podcast, and I will work something out, because it's the end of the year. I get it. It's the time that you're going to be looking at new vendors. We want you to switch to us. So I'm dodging your question right now, but I will come up with something. Just make sure they mention that they heard me on this podcast, and we will come up with some incentive, some
right
promotion
on
for you.
There you go, folks. Okay. You heard it. Go to the show notes, connect with the sales team, go do a demo, mention the podcast, and they're going to hook you guys up. All right. Thank you again.
My email, by the way, kwise@audify, if they want to directly contact me as well.
Perfect. All right. So thanks again, Carrie, for doing this. There is one question that we ask anybody that comes on the show, and that question is, where do you see the automotive industry headed in the next 5 years, and why?
Oh, this one's a hard one. I mean, because I want to be optimistic in where I want it to go. But I will say that this race to digital, this race to more efficient selling, there's going to be a lot of players that are going to jump in that race. And if you as a dealer are not owning your own strategy, as we talked about, you're not going to be defending yourself from a lot of stakeholders who care. And we know that because we have APIs, and a lot of stakeholders are using them. OEMs are looking to create a more efficient selling experience. Lenders are looking to create more efficient selling experience. The third-party websites, including even what we just heard about with Amazon and Hyundai, they're looking to create a transactional, more efficient experience. So what I would say is I could see more of these players doing what they can in their part of the funnel and jumping in this game to make the experience as transactional as possible. And so I think dealers that aren't jumping in with them, you're at risk. I know we've all said that for years. I'm not talking about online buying, but you're at risk of customers going elsewhere. And there's going to be a lot more choices, I think, in terms of shopping from that standpoint.
Well, there you have it, folks. Carrie, thank you so much. Really, really appreciate it. This was a fun conversation. And thank you for tuning in. That's all the time that we have for today. And as usual, we'll talk later.